All righty, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Mr. Z with the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. What? Hey, I'm back in the saddle again. I hope everybody's doing okay today. It's a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday morning here. I'm having technical difficulties again, folks. I put my headset in to my main computer, and guess what? I got a bunch of feedback. So I'm going to have to go in to the Guitar Center and take my computer back. All right, I'm not happy with it, but hey, it is what it is. All right, folks. So I have a dynamic guest on today, folks. I'm very happy to have on Jane Goldner. She's the author of Driven to Success. All right, she's going to be my guest today for the whole hour. And I'm happy to have her on. So we're going to talk about business today, folks. And the thing about business, I want everybody to understand, I do not know it all. I'm going to bring a person that's going to help me understand business. And I'm right now, you got to excuse me, folks. I'm trying to get my technical difficulties under control here. I'm really, really going to work with this today, folks. I'm just, trust me, it's an ongoing process. But as you know, folks, you can catch this lovely lady with me today on bbsradio.com. If anybody wants to call in, feel free to let me know. Also, too, you can catch her on KLAV this weekend coming up on 1230 KLAV. And you can catch me there online on www.klav1230am.com. Or anybody want to call in today, I have a copy of her book as well, too, today. And Jan, how are you doing this morning, ma'am?
Jane says good morning or good afternoon, depending upon where you are.
That is true, huh? Because it's noon where you're at today, huh?
It is noon, yes. Rolling into the afternoon.
Well, welcome to the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show here. I'm trying to get the dynamics of everything going here, and it's been a cluster. I'm going to have to go back again, and I've got all this computer stuff around me, but yet I can't get things to work right. So, but I'm gonna get it all together ASAP. So welcome to the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show, and please tell us who you are.
Well, I'm Jane Goldner. I am founder and president of the Goldner Group out of Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And we help leadership create the successful culture of the future, help them move past the recession and post-recession mentality to move on to get to their next level of success.
Oh, okay. And tell us about your book, please.
I wrote the book a couple of years ago to help leaders address some of the real burning issues that are happening in their businesses. And it's a very practical toolkit that's a roadmap to take them to a successful culture of the future.
Take them to a successful culture of the future. Now, the future being the future that we have going on right now is economic times, or the future in a different time?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The future, what I'm talking about, is basically
the future of right now or the future in a different time? How can I put this?
We're talking about the future right now. I think that leaders need to get past the recession and the post-recession mentality. In fact, Coach Don Shula, who's an extremely successful professional football coach that most people know, doesn't dwell on the past. He gives his team 24 hours to celebrate success or to get over their failures. And I think that's sound advice for leaders. And it's time for leaders to move on, be positive thinking, forward-looking, and start creating that culture that can attract and retain the talent that they want.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Now, I was reading the book, and it has a lot of things that were very entertaining to me about perhaps starting. You had a pyramid in there. It's like the leadership, the leader, the main person, and everybody down below. Is the leader important or is the employee important?
You know, and that's an interesting question, and I'd like to couch it in this way. In the 20th century organizations, leaders used to be the center. They used to hold all the information, all the authority. The higher up they went, the more strategic they were, and everybody else were arms and legs to implement the strategy. Well, things are changing too much. There's a lot of competition. Technology is causing things to increase in rate of change. So everybody now needs to be a strategic thinker. In fact, in one of the checkpoints called strategic thinking, I discuss how everybody needs to be focused on the strategic thinking question in a business, whether they're an individual contributor or a senior level leader. And that question is, what am I doing in my job today, and how is that going to affect the business tomorrow? And I could give you a very personal example. We ordered chairs for our office, and when the chairs came, the fabric was put on inside out.
Right.
And so we called the company back, and the customer service person said to me, what will it take for you to keep the chairs? How much of a discount? And I'm thinking to myself, this is a poor product, and you're trying to offload your problem without thinking long term whether that will cause me to be a customer in the future. And of course it wasn't going to do that. So I ended up calling the president of the company and explaining the situation, and I said, do you think your customer service person gave me a reason to continue to do business with your company? Now, of course, he made it right, but my point is that customer service person was not thinking of the impact that she was having on the customer in terms of that business tomorrow.
Got you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So customer service, I'm in the customer service business as well, too. Is that extremely important?
I believe if you asked most CEOs, they would tell you that quality customer service is a key differentiator. And I think products and services have become fairly homogenous, and customers are much more educated. They have much more access to information. In fact, two colleagues of mine, Chip Bell and John Patterson, are publishing a book coming out very soon this spring that's called Wired and Dangerous. And it's about how customers have so much access to information, including your competitors. And if you don't provide excellent customer service, your customers are going to go somewhere else. And in fact, that's what was happening over the past couple of years. During the recession, when leaders were turning inward to try and fix their company, they weren't paying a lot of attention to the customers and the customer needs. And it was a perfect time for competitors to steal customers. And so those who were asking questions to their customers like, how easy is it to do business with us? How can we help you during this tough time? Might not be able to do everything they ask for, but at least asking the question shows some customer caring. Those are the companies that did better than the others during the last several years.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Well, in the customer service business that I'm in, someone told me something once before. It might sound, they said a loyal customer will always stay with you no matter what goes on, but the people who like shop around for bargains will constantly just float around everywhere. Does that make sense?
I have to say yes and no. I believe that there's not a lot of customer loyalty, and I'm not sure. I mean, during the recession, people did and still do make some decisions around price, but I think it's all about relationships. I think that in providing good customer service means developing that relationship so that people are really interested in how they're treated, obviously the quality of the products and services, and I think price from a business-to-business standpoint doesn't become as much of an issue as the quality of the product or service and the relationship.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, tell us who you are again and how to get in touch with you, please.
I'm Dr. Jane Goldner, And either you can reach me at jane@thegoldnergroup.com. My website is www.thegoldnergroup.com. And our group is made up of only senior consultants who are very experienced in a variety of industries. And we've worked across the board with companies, Fortune companies like Coca-Cola and Georgia-Pacific, to smaller companies like an engineering company that had only 100 employees. And so what we do is so universally applicable across all segments and all sizes and types of companies.
All big, large and small, huh?
Large and small, because when once you get beyond the mom and pop stage, the entrepreneur stage, you need to start thinking about how do I create the infrastructure in my company, because we can't communicate by osmosis anymore. We're getting too big. We need to keep that communication going, that closeness going, but you have to start putting some systems and processes and structure in place. Otherwise, you tend to implode on your own success.
Well, I'm right now growing my company, and I'm having, like, difficulties doing all kind of different things. In doing business, and I'm finding out this even today, I'm having problems with my Ustream feed and people can't hear me. Even today, are business plans very key for success?
I think business plans are extremely important. I'm seeing too much ready, fire, aim. Leaders and companies throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks, and that's exactly the wrong thing to do. I think it's very important to be planful around strategies and execution. But it all goes back to, and it's the second checkpoint actually in the book, The Core. And The Core is made up of mission, vision, and values. And a lot of people get those terms mixed up. The mission is the purpose of your business, the reason it exists, what wouldn't get done if your business wasn't in existence. The vision is where are you taking your business? If it were working on all cylinders, to continue the automobile metaphor, if everybody in your company were working on all cylinders, what could it be at its best? And then lastly, the third part of the core are values. And values are those few key behaviors that you would expect people in your company to act like toward each other as well as toward your customers. And it goes beyond the motherhood and apple pie kinds of values, but it's those things that create a differentiator for your organization. So once you've got that clearly defined, and by the way, that's also important for individuals to have their own core, their own mission, vision, and values, it helps them really focus on what's important to them, that work-life balance, that focus in their job search. In fact, any of the 10 checkpoints can also be relevant to individuals. So getting back to your question about business plans, once you've got that core mission, vision, values identified, then everything connects to that. So when you create plans and strategies, it's what do we need to do to work our mission, the reason we exist? What do we need to do to move us toward our vision, what we can be at our best? And we have to make sure that anything that we ask people in our company to do, it's a reflection of the values. And obviously, we've seen a lot of organizations go down because they weren't acting on appropriate values.
Well, everybody's values are not our values. And so when we hire people, how do you determine what their values are?
That's a great question, and it brings up a very important point. Typically, when people are interviewed, they're interviewed around a job description, around what skills and abilities do you bring to the table. And that's important, obviously. You want them to be able to do the job. You also want them to be able to grow in the company, so you want to get a feel for their ability to learn. But equally as important is, will they be a culture fit for your company? And here's an example. One of my clients grew to the point where they needed a human resources person. And they had an opportunity to hire someone who came from a very large company. And this person had a huge budget, lots of staff. And she was coming to a company where she was going to be the only HR person with a shared assistant and almost no budget. So she was going to have to roll up her sleeves and do most of the work. My coaching advice to the CEO was, this is a poor fit. Absolutely, she brings phenomenal skills to the table, but she's not going to work in your small environment. He hired her, and she became a turnover statistic.
Are you familiar with the Zappos concept, how they pay people to quit if they the gentleman says if they're not a good fit, he pays them to quit? Are you familiar with that concept?
Yes, I am very familiar with that, and I think it's an excellent concept because Zappos has a very special culture, and they do an excellent job of initially training and getting people up to speed on how Zappos has become so successful with the culture they've created around customer service. And they get an opportunity, actually both sides get an opportunity, the employee and the employer, to look at how that person fits or doesn't fit. So an individual can feel free to leave, and I think the company gives them certainly a fair opportunity to leave by paying them to leave if they don't fit in the culture, because having employees that don't reflect the Zappos culture would do a lot to hurt their stellar reputation.
No.
So, you know, getting back to your question about values fit, in the interview process, it's equally as important to ask some questions that reflect the culture fit. Will this person fit? And that might be questions about where they've worked before and giving them scenarios that create a values conflict and see how they react.
Gotcha. Now tell me this. Who should create the rules? The management team, the middle management, or the employees of a business?
Are you talking about like the mission, vision, and values, the core?
Yeah, the core. Like, so I'm hiring somebody, and I want to build a team. So I don't know everything. So the people that I put around me, just like you're saying, Zappos, they have the people that they hire, and they pay them if they want to quit or not. But also based on the values of hiring these people, that's how they put the dynamics of their team together. Does that make sense? So the value is not always – I read his book. The value is not always the leader's values. They're mostly the employee's values. Does that make sense?
Well, let me back up and say that every organization operates off a set of values, whether they're explicit or not, and obviously they should be communicated to everybody so they're really clear on the values. And to me, there's a difference between everybody operating off a set of values that the company has and allowing for diversity and differences in approach to work. I think a set of values around work, and it might be quality of work, it might be communication, it might be teamwork, it might be any number of things that if you looked at any company's annual report or website, you would see those. And I think that everybody in the company who works there needs to buy into those. And to me, that's non-negotiable. Then it becomes allowing for individual differences around personality and approach to work as long as it doesn't conflict with the values.
Now, I'm going to do something that I normally do all the time on the show. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let you have the show for yourself and teach us some things today, please, about driven to success. 10-point checkpoint for achieving, 10-point checkpoint for achieving high performance in business. And then tell us who you are, please.
Okay. Again, I'm Dr. Jane Goldner. I am the founder and president of the Goldner Group, a team of very experienced only senior consultants, and we help leaders create successful cultures and help them move into the future to get them to the next level of success in their business. As I mentioned early on, the book was written for a couple of reasons. One was I didn't see anything out there that helped leaders connect all the initiatives and all the processes and the systems in their company together so they made sense to people in the company. A lot of companies were operating in a way, for example, that said, well, if it's September, we need to do strategic planning. And if it's February, we need to do performance appraisals, and so on. And rather than having them as the fad of the month, this book helps the leader tie everything together so that they can really leverage people's performance. And secondly, there was a real burning platform reason for the book. Number one, while it's an employer's market right now, employers can have their pick of lots of people and resumes, the demographics are indicating that there is going to be a talent shortage in the not-too-distant future, and therefore a talent hiring war. And this is around skilled workers, and especially true for high-tech companies. Secondly, as I mentioned before, customers are much more educated through an incredible amount of available information. There's much less loyalty. Thirdly, organizations are dealing with multiple generations in the workplace, and that demands a much more flexible and agile leadership style. Baby boomers are staying in the workplace a lot longer, as we know. They want to be appreciated for their experience and wisdom, but that creates the domino effect to Gen X and Y. There's not a lot of promotional opportunity. So as a leader, how do you keep those people self-motivated and challenged while the boomers are still in place? And then not to mention globalization in terms of companies operating globally and increased competition from global companies. So every business really needs either a minor tune-up or a major tune-up, keeping with the car metaphor, because you're going to get run over if you stand still. So the book was written to give leaders a true roadmap for how do I not get run over? How do I create the kind of environment that I can attract and retain top talent? Because, you know, your company is simply a collection of the individuals in it, and to the degree that they're really focused on performance and their passion is around the core of the company is the degree to which the company is going to be successful. So you need to attract and retain the right people. And that starts with, let's just talk about checkpoint one, which is an assessment. Leaders need a realistic assessment of what's going on under the waterline in their company. Otherwise, as we know, we tend to invent our own reality. Then that's not always the truth. For example, senior leaders often only get told the good news, and that does not help in their decision-making. And in fact, I'm dealing with a client now who thinks everything is going fine in his part of the organization. And I get to talk with a cross-section of people in the organization, and I have a feeling he has no idea what's going on under the waterline. And so obviously my job is to bring that information back to him and give him a slice and a reality check of what's going on. Because depending upon where you sit in an organization, the perspective is different. And one of the things that we highlight, we do an assessment related to the 10 checkpoints. One of the things we do is do a comparison graph to leaders versus individual contributors. And it's very eye-opening. I've already talked about the core, and people ask me when I do a keynote presentation, what's the most important of the 10 checkpoints? And I think it's the core. I think it's the mission, vision, and values. And I'm a real believer that if a leader has defined those three things, you don't need a 100-page personnel manual to tell people how to behave and what to do. If you hire right, and right means people who have a similar passion around the core. And by the way, in workshops, we have people identify their individual cores. For example, my mission is to help other people learn as I continue my own learning. And so I've been drawn to certain kinds of careers because of that, and I've made my choices around that. And if people Right. in businesses have an opportunity to define their own core, their mission, vision, and values, and see how it aligns with the core of the organization they're with, they bring so much passion to work, it's amazing. Because they're able to live their life while going to work every day, and you and I know we spend an awful lot of time at work.
Right. I live at work,
yeah.
Definitely.
And, you know, so much of the time we hear people say, I don't want to get up in the morning and go to work. I don't like where I'm going. Well, you spend too much time at work to do that to yourself.
Yes, I totally agree. If I don't like a job or I'm doing something, I'll quit, or I just won't do it because my heart's not in it. And then it compromises me as a person who I am, and I don't like being compromised. So sometimes we want to make a buck, but if you're not really happy and truly, that buck is a hard buck to earn. I'm not going to lie. So sometimes
it is. It just makes your life less than satisfactory day in and day out. And quite frankly, there are a lot of people who, the past couple of years, or what I called retired on the job. They couldn't leave because there were no opportunities to go to. So they're kind of physically still there, but
yeah.
They're not going 110% in performance. And it hurts them, and it hurts the company.
Right. I'm going to ask you a question. In Driven to Success, the 10-point checkpoint for achieving high performance in business, you're the author, Jane Goldner, Ph.D., Are employees dumbing themselves down, or are employers dumbing themselves down through this economic time where they're not going through their full potential, just trying to ride the wave? Because I don't think everybody's going at their full potential right now. I think they're just trying to kind of ride the waves and see where economic times are going, and no one's really going their full potential. Do you think we're dumbing ourselves down in society and the business world right now, or we're trying to educate ourselves more?
Well, first of all, I think companies are not dumbing themselves down. They're trying to figure out how to get smarter with fewer people, being more cost-efficient, more mm-hmm. cost-effective. So I don't think companies are. I think they understand that innovation is the road to success these days. So I think there are a lot of organizations that are trying to get more educated about ways to do things better, to exceed customer expectations, to keep their customer base and increase their customer base as well. I think we've got, let's see, there was a statistic, and I believe it was GloboForce did a survey, 87% of employees are in some level of job search. That's pretty frightening if you were an employer.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge amount of folks in organizations who either have been asked to do so much that they're so overwhelmed that they can't be effective because organizations have laid people off, and instead of doing two jobs, those people are now doing three jobs. And organizations weren't paying attention to what I call the working wounded, the ones who were told you're lucky to have a job, put your head down and go to work. and so these people are getting overwhelmed and burned out, and so they can't work to maximum performance because they don't understand what their priorities are. And then we've got the people who would like to leave. And here's an example. I was talking to a marketing coach not too long ago, and he was brought into a company to coach one of the company's high potentials. They wanted to promote him into the executive ranks. And when this coach had his first meeting with this high potential, the high potential said to him, are our conversations confidential? And the coach said, absolutely. And he said, well, good. I don't want you to help me get promoted. I want you to help me write my resume.
Whoa.
I'm feeling underappreciated. I'm feeling burned out. I've just got way too much to do, and they don't appreciate the contributions that I make. And he said, forget that they want to promote me. I'm just burned out. So I think there is more than just that one going on, and I think that people are working to keep their job until the economy truly rounds the corner, and then they're going to, the high potentials, the real good performers, are going to leave. It's going to be a revolving door if companies are not creating the right kind of environment, the right culture. And that's really the bottom line of the book is, how do you create a belonging, learning, and contributing culture? And regardless of generation, that's what people are looking for. And let me talk a little bit more about that. Everybody wants a sense of belonging. It's why we belong to families, civic organizations, religious organizations, or work organizations. We want to belong to something bigger than ourselves. And so everybody wants that sense of belonging, whether you're new in the work world at 23, you know, or you're a boomer at 60. And, you know, for example, when you go to a social gathering, after people ask your name, what's the next thing they ask you?
What do you do?
It's, right, what do you do? Where do you work? So it gives you that sense of identity. In fact, I can remember about a year or so ago at a social gathering, and I was introduced to somebody, and after we learned each other's names, I said, well, what do you do? And he goes, well, I work for AIG, but it's a division that they're spinning off. He did not want to be identified with AIG. And so that sense of belonging is very strong. And it doesn't take a lot for leaders to be able to do that. You know, how about saying good morning to people when they come in to work? I had a young man tell me that one of his leaders used to grunt at him in the hallway in the morning. You know, what kind of, you know, good morning is that? How does that make that young person feel?
How you doing?
So, you know, other ways, you know, make sure when you hire somebody that there's a, you know, there's a description of the job, that they have an opportunity to meet people in the company, they have their cubicle or office set up. That's a sense of belonging. Now, interestingly, companies used to, and less so, have employee events after work. And they felt like, you know, that helped create a sense of belonging, and I think it does. But I think they need to be voluntary, and people ought not to be penalized for not showing up, because some people want to be away from work people when they're not working.
I'm one of them. I'm not going to lie.
You might not want to spend your leisure time with people you work with.
Well, you know what, though? Can I express something to you? Maybe you can understand this, driven to success. The people that I work around, no disrespect towards them, don't have the same goals as I have in life. So when I hang around them, it's like I'm dumbing myself down to be around. And I'm not trying to criticize my other people that coworkers that I work with, but you got to be around like people sometimes. And I'm around people sometimes just to do certain things one part of my life, but the other part of my life does not fit in there. So I can see how sometimes some people just don't hang around their fellow employees. They just, when the clock is done, they're done and they're out of there. That makes sense?
And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think some people work to live. They go to work, they do an excellent job, but their real life is outside of work. And some people live to work, and those are our people who, you know, work 60, 70, 80 hours a week because that's what they enjoy doing and that's what their main focus is. And that's okay. And some people really try to balance the two, and that's okay too. You know, in the boomer era, it used to be a badge of honor to talk about how many hours you worked.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah.
Right? That was the thing you talked about. Well, I'm hearing more from the millennials, the young generation. They are looking to balance their lives. And it's not necessarily the traditional way that we think of. Some young people are saying, I know a young attorney, and he belonged to a large firm, and he said, I don't get this thing about FaceTime. Why do I have to show up on a Saturday morning for FaceTime? He said, if I need to work, my computer's networked at home. I can do a great job, you know, in my pajamas, at my computer at home. What's the thing about FaceTime? And so I explained to him that the senior partners grew up in an era when FaceTime was really important. But that's the point of valuing differences. And the bottom line is, if your employees are giving you exceptional performance and have different work styles, that needs to be okay.
Okay. Now, here we go. I'm going to touch on something. Now, you just said something about the older employees, older employers who have the different mindset, a different generation. We're in a whole different generation when it comes to technology. My godmother, Joanne Carolyn Davis, she does real estate here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And she does a lot of stuff that she has to drive people around, stuff like that. Now, the way technology is nowadays, isn't it very important for everybody to get linked in into, like, computers, whereas you can do a virtual tour of a house or an apartment, or you can do FaceTime through Skype or Uvu or any other avenue that you can have FaceTime with and do that. Is that extremely important? You see what I'm saying? Because I think the older generation is lost because of the new technology, and they're trying to get driven to success on the same thing, but they're still trying to have the the horse and cart instead of having the new Ferrari. Does that make sense?
I think you're absolutely right. If the boomer generation wants to stay relevant, they've got to get plugged in. They need to understand the current technologies and be able to use them. I can't imagine somebody not being at some level computer savvy, understanding what in the business world what LinkedIn is, promoting business through blogging and tweeting and all of that. Yes, I think to stay relevant, they need to be plugged into technology or they're going to be left behind. And what's interesting in business is that's a great way to connect the younger and the older generation. Reverse mentoring. Let the younger generation who grew up with all these toys teach the older generation how to use it and why it's important. And the older generation are great mentors and coaches for the younger generation around business and the wisdom and the experience and the history of the business.
Because right now, gas is up to almost $5 a gallon in some places throughout the nation. And everybody's squawking about this and that and the other thing. And we're getting out of winter, but we're coming into summer. And the thing that I'm looking at right now, driven to success, you have to adjust your climate to be driven to success, because you can't go off of the same. If you do a business plan, and tell me if I'm wrong, Jane, if you do a business plan and things change, you need to get back to that business plan to adjust it in order to make sure that you're going to be driven to success and not stay on the same plan that you had set in stone. That makes sense?
It absolutely makes sense, and that's why in my book I differentiate between a strategic plan and a strategic framework. And it's more around the language you use. To me, a strategic plan is a very static document. We set the plan in September, and we'll review it again next September. And that plan has our strategies and our goals and our objectives. And, well, you can't do that anymore. A strategic framework is different in that it has the same core, mission, vision, values. It has strategies. It has goals. But by the term framework, it gives you the frame of the plan, but it also says you have to fill in the meat as you go along, and you have to have contingency plans. And you have to continually look at the plan, because things are not going to stay static for a year. And so it's the same thing as you cascade that down through your business on the operational plan, the execution. You need to constantly be looking at it and making changes which gets back to having a flexible and agile leadership that understands that.
Now, please tell us who you are and the name of your book, please.
Dr. Jane Goldner, out of Atlanta, Georgia. My book is Driven to Success, a 10-point checkup for driving high performance in business.
Okay, folks, we're going to have her again on KLAV, 1230 a.m. in Las Vegas, Nevada, this Sunday morning from 6:30 to 7:30 as well, too. I am Mr. Z. This is the BBS Radio Talk Show with Clever Minds, where we turn a negative into a positive. This is my second week, and I'm building my audience, and I'm trying to get everything working with me, guys, so bear with me. But I have dynamic guests such as this lovely lady with me today, and I'm going to go do my whole studio over this week. I'm going to put everything in a different aspect, so I'm tired of all this, this nonsense. I have to do a business plan. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. It might be off the beaten path.
Okay.
And maybe you can understand this, and driven to business. And a customer service question. All right. Have you noticed that in this economic times right now, being a business person, people will complain just to get something for nothing nowadays, and you have to adjust your business plan in order to handle people that complain and want to go to customer service aspect? Because I see now is that since things are hard, I want something for nothing, or I got a complaint, let me talk to the general manager, let me talk to the president. And then in the bottom line of a business, you have people, more people complaining now, and it's hurting your bottom line because you're trying to keep these loyal customers, but they're fussing about the little smallest little things. So driven to success, how do you adjust for that?
People in this economy certainly are more cost conscious. They want to have value for their money. And when they're not satisfied, I believe they're probably quicker to complain about it because they're watching their pennies. Just like a business wants to be more cost-effective, I think individuals and families do also. They don't have the same amount of money that they once did. People joke about their 401ks being 101ks. it'd be pure conjecture on my part to say that more people are complaining and wanting something for nothing. I just think that people are much more cost conscious and, as I said, want value for their dollar, and they might be more apt to complain and want it right.
Gotcha. Now, I'm reading a part of your book here, and I like this. It says, I tell my son this all the time because that's what I'm trying to leave. Define your legacy, define a list of leadership expectations, assess yourself against this list, assess members of your leadership team against this list, ask yourself if you have the right diverse team in place. What does that all mean?
What all that means is, as a leader, it's very important to define your legacy. If you're in an organization, what are you going to do? What do you want to achieve to leave that organization, that business, better off than when you came? So, you know, everybody leaves a legacy, whether they plan for it or not. It's what people say about you after you leave. And so why not plan that legacy to say, here's what I want to accomplish and here's what I want people to say about me when I leave? And I think that's the first thing a leader needs to do when they come into their position. And then the leader needs to say, if this is a legacy I want to leave, what do I bring to the table in terms of my own strengths? And then that leads them to the next thing, which is, what strengths do I need to hire so that I have a full complement on my team? The biggest mistake that leaders have made in the past is they hire people who are like them. Look, they like them, so they like people who are like them. So they keep hiring people who are like them. And the problem is those people bring the same strengths, but they also bring the same weaknesses. So decisions aren't as effective. As a leader, I want to get the most diverse team I can in terms of skills and abilities and thinking. I don't want people who think like me. I want people to challenge me. So at the end of the day, I can make the best decision.
I totally agree. Now, I'm going to ask you some questions here, and then I'm going to let you say some other things too as well. I want you, because I'm going to have you on again. All right. Now, I'm going to give a framework. And the driven to success, I'm going to say a person who has a one business, a person who has a five-employee business, a person that has 100 employees, or a person that has 1,000 employees. Tell me, what's the difference in how to handle the business, and what are the benefits of having a smaller business? And give me the pros and cons, please, and how to interact or how to how what I'm trying to say. What's the dynamics of this book with a person who has, like, just himself as an employee in a business and one who has 10 to 50 employees or one who has 100 to 1,000? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and a person who's a small business owner and it's just himself or herself, obviously, when you're starting your business, you take in whatever business comes your way because you want to keep the doors open. And as a sole practitioner or sole business owner, you're wearing every hat. And the thing to understand is you still need to get all these things done around these 10 checkpoints. You know, you still need to define your mission, the reason that you're in business, where you're taking your business, and what values are important to you in your business. You still need to do that. You still need to understand what the key skills and competencies are that you need to have a successful business. You still need to have a strategic framework and a business plan. You still need to have measures of business success. You still have some key processes, so and so on. So you still have to have all those 10 checkpoints, but you're wearing all those hats. And obviously at some point, as you get on your feet and your business gets successful, you start deciding, what do I need to offload, you know, to a bookkeeper, to an accountant, to an administrative assistant. So you start thinking about, if I'm not going to bring more people in the business, what kind of help do I need on a contract basis?
Gotcha.
So, you know, and that just multiplies itself. As I mentioned, one client I had, I started working with them. They started as a couple, a husband and wife with one employee. When they grew to be about 10 million and 100 employees, they asked me to come in, and they were an environmental testing firm, and they had great 100 employees who were all technically very competent but didn't understand leadership. And they needed to start to create leaders for the sustainability of their business. And so we started with the core, the mission, vision, and values. They had a clear set of values, and they kind of knew the business they're in, but they were taking everything that came in the door, and it was becoming debilitating to their business. They were becoming dysfunctional, so we got them focused on really what's their mission, what's their vision, what kind of customer, what kind of business do they want. And then we worked around leadership skills and so on. And so I worked with them for about 8 years, and they grew to 300 employees, and I can't remember whether it was 30 or 40 million, but really what they wanted to do is build and sell, which they did. So that's sort of the next level once you go from the initial entrepreneurial startup to growing your company. And larger companies, absolutely, their challenge is to do all the same things, and they've got a greater communication challenge because they're trying to get everybody on the same page, and there's a lot more people to deal with. But at the end of the day, you still, in a leadership role, right now leaders have two roles, and that is to pay attention to the current economic situation, but also look around the bend. And as it relates to people, a good leader is paying attention to keeping the talent, keeping them challenged, creating that culture that causes the people to want to stay to make the business successful. And that's true whether you have one employee or 25,000 employees.
Got you. Now tell us who you are again, please, and how to get in touch with you, please.
I'm Dr. Jane Goldner. And you can either email me at jane@thegoldnergroup.com. Our website is www.thegoldnergroup.com. We have a blog, We are on Twitter. We actually, right now, last count, we have over 2,000 followers on Twitter. And our Twitter is only several months old, so that's a good thing.
Did you tweet this interview out you're going to have today? You had today?
I did.
Okay, good.
Yes, I did. I put it on my LinkedIn and on Twitter. And we post a blog every 2 weeks, and the blog is the journey through the 10 checkpoints.
Okay. Now, here we go. In success-driven times here in America, we're like no other country at all. What do you feel is our greatest asset as Americans or as people for driven to success in business, Ms. Goldner?
What do I think is the greatest asset? I think it's our entrepreneurial spirit. I think we've got an anything is possible outlook. If we find the right niche, then it's possible to be able to start and grow a business. In fact, a lot of the Fortune businesses, or several, were started during the Depression, last recession. So I think it's our can-do attitude.
Okay. Now, another one. If I never started a business before and I met you and you told me what you do for a living, what would you tell me be the first step in success, to be driven to success? What would be the first step that I would need to do?
Absolutely, absolutely. The first step is to define the core of your business. What is the mission? Why are you in business? What is the purpose of your business? And then I'd say to you, once you understand what the purpose is of your business, then it's, at its best, what do you want your business to be? Where are you taking your business? If it's functioning on all cylinders, at the end of the day, if you can look, as some people say, standing at the top of the mountain looking back down, what would be the top of the mountain? And then the values that you want your company to be known for. So, for me, the values in my company have to do with long-term client relationships, delivering on promises, quality products and services. Those things are important to me. And so all the consultants that work with me in my company operate off those same values.
Now, I fell at business, and then I need to get back up. What's the next thing I need to do if I fall down and I really mess up in these times? How do I get back on track?
First thing is I would look back at the failure or failures and say, what happened? It's sort of the Army does after action reviews, AARs, after each mission. And they sit down and they say, what went right, what went wrong, and what are the lessons learned? And I think you'll find a lot of successful people had a lot of failures before they became successful, and each will tell you that they really focused on their lessons learned.
You know, that is so true, because believe it or not, Thomas Edison did over 1,000 elements in his light bulb, right, before he got that right one. So all the mistakes he made were not really mistakes. Those were things that he knew that wouldn't work, so he knew not to try them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and there's a great book out called Innovate Like Edison by Michael Gelb, G-E-L-B, and he co-wrote it with Edison's great-granddaughter, I believe, and it just speaks to that point.
Yeah, because even though you fail, do you know the most successful people in life, the baseball players, strike out more than they hit home runs? So, hey, the more you get up to bat, the more chances you have to be successful, folks. So
that's right, and you hope at the end of the day you've got the better batting average.
Okay, now I have about 4 or 5 minutes before I get out of here today. And is there anything you want to let the audience know that about this book and about yourself, and then we're going to talk more again on Sunday, that we haven't quite covered just yet?
Well, there are lots of the 10 checkpoints we didn't cover, and maybe we can get to some of those on Sunday. But what's really important about the book is it's very actionable. It's very practical. It is not an academic exercise in reading and thinking. It gives you the high-level idea of each of the 10 checkpoints, and then it gives you actions to take, and it gives you some success stories. So it's meant to, I wrote it like an airplane book. You can put in your suit, your briefcase and take on an airplane and read it. It's written like CEOs or presidents or what we call C-suite people think. It's written with a lot of white space and bullets. There's even what's called a passing lane, which gives you just the key points of the chapter if you want the cliff notes. So it's an easy book to pick up, and it's an easy book to use as a roadmap for where you want to take your business.
I totally agree. And, folks, this has been a very dynamic show. This lady's going to be again on with me on Sunday on KLAV 1230 a.m. here in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's on www.klav1230am.com. Also, you can get it in your radio, too, as well, if you're here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I'm going to give her a lot more airtime. She had an hour today, but she's going to really get in depth with me again on Sunday for the business people that are waking up and motivate us again, inspiration for us, to driven to success. It's been a pleasure having you on today, and I want to ask you one parting question today. Give me some parting wisdom for my audience today about business, please.
The parting wisdom is, if you are a leader in business, the best thing you can do is create a belonging, learning, and contributing culture, because that's what's going to connect people to your business, to get them to go the extra mile. And each of those, we can get into more actions on Sunday, don't cost very much. You know, people do want a raise, and but like we know, a raise is like an adrenaline rush. By the next paycheck, it's absorbed into your lifestyle. So as it goes away, there's no longer a rush. But as a leader, it's what you do between raises that keeps people focused on your business and wanting to help it grow.
I agree. This has been the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. I was here with Jane Goldner, PhD, the author of Driven to Success. I have one quote for you guys. I always tell everybody, take care of your dreams and your dreams will take care of you, okay? Also, too, please, folks, remember this as well, too. Here's what
Sounds
I want people
good.
To know. Here's what I want people always to know. If you are not on the right road path of success, stop. Get on the next one. Because guess what? That's what life's about. Sometimes you go down the wrong road path, and it's not the right one. Doesn't mean your life's over with. Continue. Try again, folks. Success will always be there in front of you if you reach for it. Do you agree, my lady?
I agree with you.
All righty. Here we go. We will talk with everybody again on Sunday. This has been the Mr. Z on the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. It's been a pleasure having you on today, Miss Jane. And I will see you on Sunday, okay?
See you then.
All right, then. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.
All right, everybody. This has been the Clever Minds Radio Talk Show. We're having some problems here, or I guess on my webpage. But I'm about to get on out of here, folks. I got things to do, and I'm going to go ahead and bounce. You folks have a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday. Thank you very, very much. And I will see you again real, real soon, folks, Sunday. And on Friday, we have a great author on. She's going to be talking about relationships, okay? I'll talk with you folks later. Have a great day. I'm out of here, all righty? Peace. Bye-bye.